Veteran Congresswoman Corrine Brown is in the fight of her political life. Dozens of new jobs are announced for the city. And speaking of Jacksonville, we are in the middle of the pack when it comes to our population growth. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show video on demand with our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Then later, don't miss today's One Tank Trip. Ideas this spring for cool places around the region you can check out on just one tank of gas. Plus, we'll take you to the newest hotspot over in the Brooklyn neighborhood. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and that means time for our weekly roundtable here today. Paula Horvath of the Florida Times-Union. Hey, Paula.
Good morning, Melissa.
A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Hello, Melissa.
Good to see you. Claire Goforth, editor at Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
And our own WJCT analyst, John Burr.
Good morning.
Guys, great to see you. Get on the line now with your thoughts about the biggest stories of the week at 549-2937. And plenty of news to discuss. Later, we'll tell you how Jacksonville is faring in terms of population growth, a new jobs announcement this week, and more. But first this morning, as speculation swirls that Congresswoman Corrine Brown may announce today that she is not running for re-election, her spokesman denies that as Brown continues to fight through the biggest challenges of her political life. She's dealing not only with a House ethics investigation, but also a court hearing later today in Tallahassee on redrawing her congressional district. We're going to begin the hour now with a look at the veteran politician's troubles. As we take your calls, our question to callers, what are your reactions to Congresswoman Corrine Brown's fight to survive? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Let's begin with our own analyst, John Burr. The Congresswoman's office denying speculation that's been swirling all week, John, that she might not stand for re-election given the issues she's currently facing. Her spokesman, David Simon, saying, yes, Congresswoman Brown will run for re-election, but she'll also be in Tallahassee today for a court hearing on redrawing her congressional district, which would make it her re-election battle tougher than usual. Let's begin with that piece of this.
Yeah, it would be tougher because it's a completely different district. It's not gerrymandered, to use the Florida Supreme Court's description, to help her get elected or help an African-American candidate get elected. She's held this seat since 1993, and I'm sure she'll fight for it. But, you know, she's even got bigger problems than getting reelected. You know, she's got a potential legal fight that well, we'll just have to see where it goes. But it's she's got some major controversy swirling around her right now.
That's right. Paula Horvath, the House Ethics Committee is investigating Congresswoman Brown, although we need to make sure that we're clear that there are no criminal charges filed against her or any findings of wrongdoing. But they are looking into allegations of mismanagement of campaign donations, among other things.
Right. And, you know, this hasn't been the first time that Corrine Brown's record has been called into question. It was, I think, 1997 when she actually was brought up before the House Ethics Committee previously when she had testified in defense of a gentleman from Africa who had been in prison due to fraud charges. And at the time, she had been using his Miami home, and an associate of his gave her daughter Alexis. He fled the country after he was let out of prison, so that kind of ended that ethics committee investigation because they couldn't force him to come in and testify anymore. I don't think this one will be like this.
A.G. Gankarski, this latest investigation involves someone who worked at her charity. It's called One Door. This person has agreed to work with authorities. She signed a plea agreement admitting a role in conspiring to commit wire fraud with an unnamed public official that's widely assumed to be Corrine Brown.
Right. And that would be, person A in the report. Person B is, widely assumed to be Von Alexander, you know, Corrin Brown's aide who is implicated in another issue working for JTA simultaneously while working with Corrin Brown. The thing with One Door for Education is it was a charity that took money from people, including, you know, many of our city's leading people, including people high up in JTA and elsewhere, but they didn't actually disperse the money on the charitable endeavors. What they did instead was, you know, Corrin and other people were traveling, spending money based off the charity, and it was about $800,000. So, you know, she's going to have to answer to that. But, you know, here's the sad reality. And, you know, the media, you know, here and elsewhere seems to be, you know, dancing on Corrin's, you know, grave before she's buried. But if Corrin Brown loses, if Corrin Brown is out, then, you know, likely it's going to be Al Lawson, who's from Tallahassee, being our congressman, you know, for that area. What that means is we're going to lose some appropriations battles, we're going to lose seniority, we're going to lose knowledge of the area, and, you know, our local politicians are going to lose their conduit to D.C., so there's more at risk than Corrin Brown. I mean, she makes a convenient pinata to beat up, but the reality is, if Corrin loses, we lose.
And the number to join the show with your thoughts about the top stories of the week is 549-2937. Claire Goforth, Democratic strategist Steve Schell, who led President Obama's election efforts in Florida, says, "I come from the school that people underestimate Corrin Brown at their own peril." Can Corrin Brown survive this scandal?
That's a very good question, and everybody is wondering whether or not she can. It looks like to me that this is a long time coming. Corrin Brown has, for the bulk of her career, been about pork. She brings the money back to the district, and she's also apparently, from the looks of things, been lining her pockets and the pockets of her friends through her position. Now, if Corrin Brown had been taking a leadership role on issues such as voter disenfranchisement laws that have 1 in 5 black Floridians without the right to vote, and maybe criminal justice reform that has decimated her community, then we wouldn't have these problems. She should have been focusing her efforts on real issues and less on pork. All these years.
Her votes have actually been consistent with those concerns.
Her votes, but does she take a lead on legislation? If you get a camera somewhere, she will be there, but she's not drafting legislation.
Well, I mean, she's voting right on these bills. She's basically as far left as you can get in terms of an electable person in Northeast Florida. You know, that's the reality of it. Is she introducing as many bills as she could? No, that's a different matter. I agree with you there. But the fact is, in terms of being an avatar for those issues, she's about as good as we're going to get in this area.
I don't believe that. I believe there's got to be someone better.
Someone electable?
Well, you know,
John.
Regardless of her voting record, which is very liberal, especially for Northeast Florida, you know, if she's been, it's what she's been doing, allegedly been doing, to, as Claire put it, line her pockets, that's got her into trouble. So, you know, we're just going to have to see how that plays out. The, you know, she was on, Channel 4 had an interview with her yesterday. Jim Pickett, grabbed her real quick, and the level of, paranoia that she displayed was Nixon-like. She just replied to questions with, "This is all about trying to get Corrin Brown. They're just trying to get Corrin Brown," and you know, she is like very hunkered down. She's scared. I mean, that was the vibe I took from it.
Paula.
And she's imperiled from all sides. I mean, the redistricting issue, which is in the courts, as well as this issue. The issue with Von Alexander, who was doing work with Corrin Brown's office and then also doing subcontracting with JTA, which is an apparent violation of ethics rules. So she's imperiled from all sides, but she is a fighter. I have no idea what's going to happen with her. She has overcome lots of things in her past, and who knows?
And you could go to any congressional district around the country and find a story like this where a public official with long tenure and wide influence has battled back against these types of corruption charges. There are places all over America where you can profile officials like that.
Right. But in Corrin Brown's case, you know, she's got the League of Women Voters against her on one side. She's got Republicans. She's got white Democrats. So, I mean, it's all closing in on her. And, you know, really, if she if the redistricting is not reversed, and we're going to assume that it's not, she's going to, if she runs again, she'll be running in CD5 against Al Lawson.
And that's a former state senator.
Right. And Al Lawson is ready to make this race one about ethics. And to voters out west who don't know Corinne, it's going to be interesting because Al Lawson will say, well, there's this ethical compromise issue you can't vote for. And, you know, if you go out west and you look at the primary results from the presidential primary a few weeks back, then you basically see that you had a lot of people who were averse to Hillary Clinton. A lot of people voted for Bernie Sanders or Martin O'Malley out of protest votes. And these people are not going to be amenable to voting for Corinne Brown, who represents more of the same.
Will they vote for Lawson? And here's the other big unanswered question. Will former Mayor Alvin Brown jump into this race? Claire?
I don't know. Maybe he will. I know he recently popped up when Bill Clinton came to town, so there's a chance he's ready to dip his toe in the water of Northeast Florida politics yet again.
What's he got better to do, right?
He's teaching.
Oh, well, come on.
It's almost over.
Would you rather teach or be in Congress?
You know, he's going to take it to the next level if he runs. You know, he's going to be focused on a laser on getting things done. And, you know, God, I am praying for him to win because I really want to see those Alvin Brown, Lenny Curry press conferences for the next 7 years. And that'll just be great because Lenny Curry's going to be eating a lot of words if that happens.
Assuming Alvin gets reelected.
And let's go now to your calls on the top stories of the week. The number to join the show, 549-2937. What do you think about this story? We'll go to some other news and notes in a moment. Ed in Orange Park. Hi, Ed. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Yes, a couple of quick things. One about Corinne Brown. One thing that people forget is losing the seniority, which involves power in Congress. That's something that's going to be occurring with the changes on the district. But real quick, also, I think I'm going to tell you something that I think belongs probably to the only in Florida area. I went to Disney World a few weeks ago to the, I guess they call it Hollywood Studios now. It used to be MGM Studios, the Indiana Jones show. If you remember, they had the scene there where Indiana Jones fights a bunch of Nazis that go with a plane and trucks and all that. I noticed something. They changed the swastika. Instead of the swastika, which is, of course, is what they had up to now, now they have the World War One German symbol of the Iron Cross. And I'm trying to figure out who the heck complained. I'm sure it wasn't the Nazis. And, of course, the swastika was originally taken from ancient Buddhist and Hindu.
But, Ed, what does this have to do with Corinne Brown?
Well, no, okay. I just thought I was going to do both things. But
all
right, no problem. I mean, just basically saying that the other thing is that they had a political correctness that's going on now. It's just unfortunate. And also the fight scene, the big mechanic, which was a Nazi, they changed to an African-American guy now.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Thanks for that call. 549-2937. Steve is in Yulee. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I just want to say I think the former mayor would be a great choice for Corinne Brown's seat.
Yeah? Why is that?
Well, he was pretty straight shooting the whole time he was in there as mayor, and he's not real, real liberal, but I think he just did an overall really good job.
Okay, thanks for the call. All right, based on our very unscientific survey, Alvin Brown's public image, his name recognition, the way voters would perceive him, should he stand for this race for Congress?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with Alvin Brown is he's not socially liberal. I mean, we saw his, evasive maneuvers on the HRO expansion over, four years? So that's working in his favor in terms of running in a socially conservative area. He's good at fundraising, obviously. His PAC did very well in a reelection race. You know, he's got a conduit to Shad Khan, got a conduit to a local lobbyist. You could see Alvin Brown being advanced as a Jacksonville candidate. The other name I'm hearing as a potential is Tony Hill, former state senator, who has a lot of union ties. You've also got Audrey Gibson and Mia Jones. Audrey Gibson, current state senator, Mia Jones, minority leader or close to it in the mm-hmm. Florida legislature. So you've got four people and they're all going to be positioning if Corinne Brown goes down. But, you know, Alvin Brown of the four, has the best name recognition, has the most experience dealing with the media. And, you know, really
strong D.C. ties. And if Hillary Clinton becomes the next president, he's got a direct pipeline to that whole world as well.
Exactly.
And those are all African-American folks. Is it just a given that the Democrats are going to nominate an African-American for that?
Well, the way that the district is drawn, then, yeah, that's what you're going to see out of Jacksonville, because the district is drawn in such a way that it basically encompasses most of the minority access council districts and then goes out west. So you're basically going to see a tale of two population sets in that district, you know, white conservative Democrats out west and our, you know, District 7, 8, 9, and 10 people in the east. And,
but our people in Tallahassee, they won't know the names of any of these folks in Jacksonville running.
Well, you know, they will to a point, especially like the other three who have served statewide. And, you know, in terms of Alvin, you know, an Alvin media campaign may work. He's very good at turning it on for the cameras. He's got a great smile, great presence. I mean, those of us who know Alvin know he's got, you know, two sides to his personality. But in terms of coming off well on a commercial, in terms of coming off well on a soundbite, he usually can do it.
Bill in Clay County. Bill, good morning. Go ahead. Happy Friday.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Great.
My question, I might be jumping ahead a little bit, but it deals with the question of jobs and job opportunities coming to Jacksonville. The question is, when these companies come in and Jacksonville offers the tax credits for employment, the question is, where are they hiring from? Are they actually hiring from Jacksonville, the city itself? Or are they hiring from Nassau County, Clay County, St. John's County?
Okay.
Because they are, essentially what they're doing, they're subsidizing the suburbs. I'll take the answer up to here. Thank you.
All right, Bill, let's jump ahead on the rundown and talk about Mayor Lenny Curry and other local leaders this week announcing Project Star with the promise of dozens of new jobs in the area as a Scottish refrigeration company announced this week that they will bring their headquarters here to Jacksonville. Paula Horvath, of course, the mayor and other city leaders always looking for those types of announcements. But what about Bill's point of view and his comments?
Well, you know, they are going to be giving giving them about $353,000 in incentives, including a $30,000 grant, $200,000 tax credit, another $122,000 from the state. So they are giving them that. But on the other hand, we should be getting a number of jobs. I'm not sure it's clear where those jobs will be coming from, where those employees will be coming from. But I think this is a good deal for Jacksonville.
Claire, go forth.
Sure. And some of the jobs, from my reading of it, is the basically reappropriating jobs that would have been under Bylow and Dixie that are now going to be under this company. Now, one of the things I noted from the article is that the talks began in earnest in April 2015. So perhaps we should go back and thank former Mayor Alvin Brown for getting the ball rolling on this one.
John Burr.
And probably Shad Khan, because, you know, apparently this got started as an outgrowth of the Jaguars going to London to play ball and the Chamber going over to London with them. So, yeah, it's got a history. You know, these companies, they will come in and they will hire from the metro area. They don't think about it in terms of, geez, I got to hire from Duval County because Duval County gave me the... They hire the best people they can find in the area, so they're not really looking at it as county by county.
Yeah.
AG.
And really the big pitch, Audrey Moran said that the big pitch chamber chair right now said that it was made at the Jaguars game, you know, that week when they went out to London. And so that was October. So Alvin Brown got the ball rolling, but Lenny Curry and Audrey Moran and Greg Anderson, council president, you know, did close the deal. And, you know, Lenny Curry was talking yesterday about at the press conference about how this basically validates the London trips for the Jaguars, because every time they go over there, they bring back more jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got a lot of criticism in October about the trip. But, you know, he seems to see this and other job moves as a validation of it. So, you know, it's really something that, you know, if our city leaders can get out there and recruit jobs, that's an important thing. And one of the things that happened last year during the campaign was the Jack's Chamber endorsed Lenny Curry over Alvin Brown. And part of the reason was because the chamber had more of a comfort level with Lenny Curry in terms of closing these kind of deals.
Paula Horvath.
The other reason I think this is a really interesting fit for Jacksonville is that the owner of this company, which is Sir Willie Huey, I believe that is how you pronounce his name. Sir Willie was actually knighted in 2012, obviously, for his philanthropy in the UK. Over the past 5 years, he's donated $5.5 million to charities. And interesting, one of the biggest donor or ones receiving his donations and the one that he has been a very fervent supporter of is a group called Entrepreneurial Startup. And it's actually an accelerator for startups and scale-ups in the area. I just think that's such an interesting fit here for Jacksonville.
Yeah. And if you're just tuning in, we're discussing the top stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. The number to join us, 549-2937. Now, also making headlines this week, Nicolae Vidi has rated himself as effective in leading the local public schools. This was the superintendent's self-evaluation he handed in to the Duval County School Board, which, of course, he's had a fractious relationship with as of late. Claire Goforth, it will be interesting to see how the board receives this as they try to iron out their differences.
Yes, I think it's pretty clear how the board's going to receive it. Maybe they'll crumble it up and throw it away. Maybe they'll laugh. I mean, they've had such a contentious relationship with one another. Hopefully they're trying to smooth that over. I think anybody who's filled out a self-evaluation knows that they only have so much value, and you really have very little interest in evaluating yourself harshly or too positively. I mean, it's really just an exercise in futility for HR records.
Right. I mean, who's going to say, oh, I'm terrible at my job, or, oh, I'm the best that ever was? On the other hand, Nicolae Vidi could point to several positive data points when it comes to school graduation rates and more.
The school graduation rate is the big one, too. There's no arguing with that, and that's been a black guy for Duval County for decades, and he's brought it up. And I think among the big cities in Florida, where you have the second highest graduation rate, up from the bottom. So that's a pretty big accomplishment in the short time he's been here.
Yeah, you know, Vidi has a lot of things to point to, a lot of good data points, teacher recruitment being one of them also. But one of the issues you deal with Vidi is the reality that he doesn't do necessarily the best job of communicating his accomplishments, above all the other drama with the school board, with Connie Hall especially. So it's interesting to see, and he actually pointed out in his self-evaluation that relationships between board members and the superintendent need to continue to be a focus area. You know, I think the board is going to come back with something a little bit lower than effective. There's going to be internal debate on the subject. It's going to be something where Nicolae Vidi will probably be made to answer for the self-evaluation going forward, because, you know, there's a cadre of people on the board who just don't like him. Paula Wright, Connie Hall, you know, Becky Couch may be in the mix. So,
but there will be school board elections soon.
Yes, there will
be. And if there's a rash of, you know, a whole group of new faces,
right,
it could change considerably what goes on over there.
Support.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just one way. There's some people there who really like him too.
Well, and we won't be waiting too long to hear what they think, because it's this Thursday that indeed they have to turn in, the school members have to turn in their evaluations of him. So we're going to get some feedback pretty quickly here. Good.
One of his biggest advocates is going to be gone, though, Jason Fisher. He's running for State House. So, you know, he's going to be replaced, you know, soon enough. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, and also interesting to see how in these school board campaigns, if retention of Vidi becomes an issue, because if they become an issue in the campaign trail, it bleeds over to everything else.
And the number to join us as we discuss the top headlines of the week, 549-2937. Something else we want to make note of, an increasingly heated conflict between our local public defender, Matt Shirk, and our state attorney, Angela Corey. This has to do with a decision by the state attorney's office to show surveillance video of the murder of a Jacksonville woman named Shelby Farah to her brother, Caleb. Shelby's mother, Darlene, was vehemently opposed to that, and public defender Matt Shirk is accusing Corey's office of inappropriately showing this video and violating Florida statutes by doing so. A.G. Gankarski, there's been no love lost between these two officials in recent years, and this is the latest example.
Right. I mean, there was a perception a couple years back that Shirk and Corey had a very close working relationship. You know, this case shows some daylight, because Shelby Farah's murder a few years back, you've had Darlene Farah, Shelby Farah's mother, saying that she does not want the death penalty. In this case, this is something the state attorney's office has resisted. And to that end, the state attorney's office has shown Darlene's son, Caleb, the video of of the murder, which apparently the dispute is you have to have parental consent in this case to show the video. So there's a 3-page letter that went out from the public defender's office to the state attorney's office on the subject. The word third-degree felony was actually thrown in because of that unauthorized showing the video. This is something that so far the state attorney's office has taken a high road in responding to. Bernie DeLaRonda, is basically going to respond to this in a letter, and it's going to go forth in a courtroom. I don't know if that charge of a third-degree felony will stick, but the fact that it's being thrown out there speaks volumes.
Well, if in fact it's found that they violated Florida statutes, are there any repercussions to hold a public official, a prosecutor, to account?
It's the custodian of public records, basically. So the state attorney's office is custodian of that record, and they are expected to act within statutory guidelines on, you know, showing it. So, you know, that's really the issue. I mean, is it something that can actually stick in a criminal way? Who knows? But it's something that if you're putting it out there in a letter and you're circulating that to the media, it tells me that you're wanting to make a statement on this case and, you know, how the state attorney's office tends to pursue the death penalty, tends to overcharge. I mean, it's something that Angela Corey said herself, that in cases she overcharges time and time again. And it's, you know, it's a negotiating posture. If you charge, you know, the highest possible thing and get something lower, then you may get justice served. But it's something that the public defender is calling increasing attention to lately.
And let's also make note of the fact that this week we learned Jacksonville is the 53rd fastest growing metropolitan area in the U.S. out of nearly 400. Our population growth better than most, but not in the top tier. These stats come from the Census Bureau. We're not going down like, say, Cleveland, Ohio, Claire. We're going up, but not certainly as fast as other Florida cities.
Yes, I'm sure people have a lot of mixed feelings about that. New people means new jobs, hopefully, and new revenue, but it also means a lot more Yankees at the beach.
A lot of transplants moving in. That is changing the makeup, the character of this city.
And maybe it'll change the city's politics moving forward. Jacksonville is a wonderful place to live. I love it here. I'm sure everyone sitting at this table does. That's why we live here.
Paula Horvath.
I think it's real interesting. Of course, we have a large land area here, being that Jacksonville is Duval County. When we're comparing ourselves to other cities that are probably migrating, or people are immigrating in to a more urban area, we have lots of land here for people.
John?
It'll be interesting to see, with the bust in the oil business in the last year, the Texas cities were huge on this list.
Yeah, but, and southeastern cities overall.
Right.
Yeah.
Texas is cooling off big time now that oil is it's a boom and bust business. So that could play well for Florida and for Jacksonville in terms of attracting even more people.
All right, and we will keep our eyes on that. Finally, it's our collection of strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous stories from the week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Well, only in Florida do fire breathers disrupt a high school pep rally by sending a bunch of students to the hospital. I'm amazed this got approved. A performer was burned and 7 students were injured after an incident at a pep rally at Atlantic Community High School down in Delray Beach. They brought in a fire breather wielding a baton to entertain the kids, but things went horribly awry. He suffered burns during the performance. You can check out video and Snapchats of the incident on social media and Twitter. Now, this happened during a rally to get the kids all worked up to do well on the Florida Standard Assessment Test.
Decreasing test anxiety.
Exactly. I'm thinking maybe they would rather that the fire breather burn the tests instead of them. Only in Florida do suspects fleeing the cops sick their pit bull on the police, only to have the dog bite the suspect instead. As Avery Davis ran from Riviera Beach police officers Monday, he released his pit bull and told the animal to attack the officers. But the pit bull instead bit Avery in the buttocks and tried to bite his head, too, before Davis ran and hid in a nearby apartment complex.
That's a smart dog.
That pit bull's an art.
I thought pit bulls are good.
Yeah. Police eventually caught up with Davis. He's now in custody. No word on who's watching the dog. But there it is for you. Only in
Probably
Florida.
The police took that dog.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thanks to our media panel, Paula Horvath, John Burr, A.G. Gankarski, and Claire Goforth. Thank you for being here. Have a great holiday weekend.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
We'll be back in a moment.
Can we shorten WJCT's spring fundraiser by getting there early? Let's find out. It's time to give now. When we get to our goal of $80,000, the fundraiser ends, so there's no need to wait, no special gifts or prizes that you can't get in on right now. If this station is important to you, please join us. Donate now at WJCT.org or by calling 904-353-9528.
It was the chirp heard round the world. The first direct detection of gravity waves. But how did we get there? I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, we delve into the backstory of LIGO, a tale of clashing egos, plot twists, triumphs, and tragedies. All on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Artists, would you like your photography, music, paintings, or poetry featured on WJCT? Submit your work to The Square, an online gallery and competition for local artists. Winners get a quality video produced by WJCT about their work. If you submitted during a past round, you can submit again. Share your work now at wjct.org/thesquare. Presented by WJCT and Grassroots Natural Market.
Presidential candidates from both parties have criticized the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
We're not going to be able to change everybody's minds, and that's not our goal. It's not what's necessary.
I'm Molly Wood. Passing the TPP through Congress is an uphill battle. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, this spring on the show, we're giving you ideas every Friday for one tank trips. Interesting places that you can visit all around the region on just one tank of gas. Writers Tiziana Onstead and Luke Barber from UNF's One Tank Media Project are here now with a look at this week's trips. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, in a minute, Luke, you're going to take us out to Camp Blanding, which, by the way, I've never been there, so this is a great suggestion. We'll hear all about that. But first, Tiziana, your assignment this week was local restaurants and bars using farm-to-table ingredients, and there are lots of them around town to pick from. Let's begin with Grape and Grain Exchange in San Marco, and that is a one-tank trip. That's maybe a tenth of a tank for a lot of us. But tell us about that.
It is amazing. So I live in Jacksonville, born and raised, and I was unfamiliar with it. And when I was researching about all the places that do farm to table in Jacksonville and a part of the movement here, I came across this bar, and it's not a restaurant, but it's the bar side of it, and where they're taking produce from local farms in and around Jacksonville and putting it into cocktails. So it's more of a garden to glass version, is what they would call it, and it shows in their drinks with one sip. It's delicious.
What did you have?
So
You look barely old enough to order a drink. You're such a fresh-faced young lady, I have to say. But what did you have?
I promise I'm old enough.
I know you are. I know you are. I'm just teasing.
I had the Bebopsy? Bebops and Rocksteady. Thank you. They have complicated names on their drink menus, but it goes with not the complicated taste, but the different taste that you get in them. And it is bourbon, fresh mint, their own homemade bitters. So what they're not only just muddling these produce like mint or any herbs that they have or fresh fruit, they are also making their own bitters. Mm-hmm. And they're not diluting their liquor. I forgot the word for it, but making their own vodkas with it as well. So
Yeah. It's a unique experience. Now, two other places you're focusing on that really specialize in farm to table are Black Sheep. I'm actually going there today. local favorite, and Moxie Kitchen over at the town center.
Yes. Well, I didn't visit Moxie, but Moxie is on the list where they do farm to table. I went to Black Sheep and I spoke with their executive chef, Waylon Rivers. Mm-hmm. And I was just actually talking to Luke about this because he visited this week for his first time, and they do farm to table. They some of the farms that they receive their stuff from is such as Black Hog Farm, uh-huh. and that's about only 30 minutes away as well. And they get their chickens or their eggs from there, but you can tell the taste in just like their salad. They make the simple salad with a dressing that probably includes two ingredients, and their lettuce is just amazing. Luke is now obsessed with their tomatoes. And you know, you don't really hear many people obsessed with vegetables. So that says something right there.
Absolutely. And Luke, you've got another one, tank trip suggestion.
That's right.
Camp Blanding near Stark, Florida, for history buffs, everything from history to hand grenades. People can read about it at onetankmedia.com. Tell us about That's your right. visit to Camp Blanding.
So Camp Blanding was a very interesting place. I mean, basically, the camp was formed 1941, I believe, and since then, there's been hundreds of thousands of soldiers going through Camp Blanding, training there, mm-hmm. Mostly infantry training, stuff like that, but they had a museum set up there that I thought was particularly interesting. They had photos everywhere, like old newspaper clippings. It was awesome. Weapons displays. I don't know. I'm a self-proclaimed history buff, so I thought it was really awesome. I like World War II a lot. But basically, the photo displays all around the room, they had like supplemental descriptions under each of them, so you just knew exactly what you were looking at.
Yeah, and people might not realize Camp Blanding during the World War II years was one of the largest infantry training camps in the country.
That's right.
And people can learn about all of that history at the museum and also for active and retired military personnel. Camp Blanding is a place to kind of go and have fun, fishing, swimming, camping out. Can civilians do that too?
I think it's just for active and retired.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a beautiful place to visit.
Absolutely. And one thing about Camp Blanding that I thought was really interesting was it was built by the same people that built the Empire State Building.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. But yeah, they were contracted. They actually finished the job in 90 days, I believe.
Wow. And so that's the whole purpose of One Tank Media, is to educate the public about all of this interesting history and places to visit. How are you guys deciding on your assignments and where you're going to go each week?
It's kind of up to us. You know, we pitch our stories when it comes down after we finish our first and we go to the next. And, you know, we have several ideas and everyone else chimes in on those ideas too. So if it doesn't seem that interesting or it's like right there, like you have to do it, it kind of motivates us. But to us, I mean, who doesn't love traveling? Who doesn't mm-hmm. want a job that you can go outside of an office and meet these incredible people, see these incredible things that you're not used to? And it's not far. It's like it's One Tank Media says, it's 100 miles in and around Jacksonville.
That's the limit.
Yes.
No more than 100 miles. So where are you going next week?
Hmm.
Do you know yet? Or is it all up in the air?
Well, my next assignment is to pretty much map out the musical history of Jacksonville. So I think
that's
going to be pretty interesting.
That will be a good one. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Absolutely.
Well, you can learn more about the students' travels at onetankmedia.com as we partner with them this spring to give you some ideas for One Tank trips. Tune in every Friday to hear it. Tiziana Onstead and Luke Barber from One Tank Media over at UNF. Have a good time traveling. We'll see you soon.
Thanks,
Thank
Melissa.
You.
And we'll be right back.
Your generosity makes WJCT possible, not just for you, but for everyone in our community. Please make your donation online today at WJCT.org and help us change the tradition of fundraising that interrupts programs. Our promise is simple. The drive ends when we reach $80,000. So please renew your support today at WJCT.org or by calling 904-353-9528. Thanks.
A revolution is happening. Cable companies are unbundling. They're offering fewer channels, and some viewers are losing their favorites.
It's nice to sit and watch something about farming and something that you really love, like animals, instead of those goofy Real Housewives.
The changing business of television, later on All Things Considered, from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Join WJCT for a special sneak preview of Ken Burns' Jackie Robinson documentary, Sunday, April 3rd, in the Virginia Room in the Ringhaver Student Center of Flagler College. The film depicts the life and accomplishments of baseball legend and civil rights pioneer Jack Roosevelt Robinson, who fearlessly crossed baseball's color line and continued fighting discrimination after his baseball career ended. Reception begins at 3 with screening and discussion to follow. This event is free, but registration is required. Info at wjct.org/events.
Oh, your perfume.
Yes.
It's nice.
Thank you.
The film Carol, about a love affair between two women in the 1950s, is now on DVD. It's based on a 1952 novel by Patricia Highsmith. On the next Fresh Air, director Todd Haynes and Phyllis Nagy, who wrote the screen adaptation and knew Highsmith, join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, we're spotlighting the newest place to open in the exploding Brooklyn neighborhood of Jacksonville. It's Hobnob. Co-owner Ellen Cottrell is here along with executive chef Roger Regulacion. We've got some tasty details to share. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Ellen, let's begin with you. Hobnob, the latest place to open in the new Unity Plaza in Brooklyn, which has become such a center of activity. Very exciting.
Very exciting. We're really happy to be in that kind of location.
Yeah, so tell us what's happening.
Well, so we are opening up tonight, actually, is our first
tonight
night for the public for dinner. We've had soft openings all week, and it's been really well received. We're really excited. Roger will tell you a little about the menu in a minute. But all next week, we're having kind of soft opening lunches, but we'll be open for dinner for reservations. And then on next Saturday night, having sort of our big grand opening party with Chris Thomas Band playing in the amphitheater, and we're just going to have a great time.
Wow, that is exciting. So tell us a little bit about the menu, Roger. It sounds delicious.
It is, actually. Our restaurant basically focuses on global inspiration with local intentions. So on our menu, we have everything from Italian to French to Asian. So we try to cover everything to make everybody a little bit happy and everyone's palate can come in and get a little taste of everything that they're craving for that day.
It sounds amazing. And I love the name of the place, too, because you do want it to be a place where people hobnob and come out and have a drink and socialize. And that's the whole point of Unity Plaza anyway.
Exactly. And I think it's really the perfect location for that restaurant. And when we decided that we wanted to do a restaurant, that is kind of the whole atmosphere culture we wanted to create, where you could come and have just great, amazing food, you know, elevate your palate, but in a very, we like to say, playfully sophisticated setting. And I think we really kind of We did it, and it's kind of been received that way.
Now, Roger, you grew up in Hawaii, right? How does that how did that inform the way you cook and plate up food?
Well, I was actually born in Hawaii. My dad is from the Philippines, and my mom is actually from Mobile, Alabama. So we grew up with that diverse kitchen, that diverse food in my house. So, and also being in Hawaii, there's so many cultures that are melded together there. So growing up and wanting to try different foods has always been a part of my life. So this menu fits perfectly into that.
And how do you see Hobnob as expanding the city's palate in general? Because in recent years, the restaurant scene, I think, has really grown up in Jacksonville.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely in terms of the craft cocktail scene. And Marlon Hall, who is our beverage manager, well-known in the community, has some amazing cocktails that we're using. And just the menu in general, I think Roger's really pushed the limits of just going beyond what you usually have in the Jacksonville area. We've been just getting rave reviews about just the concept and the originality and the flavor combinations and everything.
And when it comes to a restaurant experience today, it seems to me, and you guys know much more about this than me, but diners' tastes and their expectations have really jumped up. They want the full ambiance. They want the full experience. Absolutely. It's really like theater in a way. So how will Hobnob meet that kind of demand?
Well, it's funny you say that because it's absolutely true. You've got so many people out there. Just about everybody's a foodie today. Everybody's Instagramming pictures of the restaurant they're dining at that night. So one of the key things that we try to do there is we try to make several of our dishes sociable and shareable. One of the things that we have in there from an appetizer perspective is that we have an ahi poke tuna and spicy jumbo limp crab tacos that come with pickled banh mi style vegetables. You can get that for two people, four people, six people. It's just one of those dishes that you can put in the center of the table and share with everyone and hobnob and drink and socialize.
Now, some of the same people that have been behind Candy Apple Cafe and Sweet Pete's have been involved with helping launch this place. So there's a good track record, it sounds like, behind what you're doing.
We originally actually started the whole idea and the whole concept of that kind of culture of coming and having great food and just socializing and having a wonderful time with our then partners, Jen and Liz Ernest from Chef's Garden. And that's kind of how we started. Now they're doing Candy Apple solely, and we're doing Hobnob, and you know, they're doing so great and they're so creative, and we're hoping for the same kind of success with Hobnob.
What's it like to take something like this from, you know, bringing it down to the first construction moves to the actual opening? It's like having a baby, isn't it?
Kind it of is, in a way. And really, it was like an intellectual thing for a year and a half or so before, you know, building even ever started. And our general contractor company also does the building, and we, you know, worked with the design. So we've really been in touch really every single step of the way. So it has been definitely a labor of love and almost like labor having right. the baby. But to see it, especially this week, up and running has just been fabulous. And
tell us a little bit, too, about your hopes for Unity Plaza. Beyond Hobnob's success, what do you hope to see happen in that space over the years?
Oh, we'd love to see it continue to grow. I mean, you know, when I left Jacksonville a couple of years ago and lived in Houston, that whole area was just dirt. And now to come back and see how much it's grown and how much it's continuing to grow, we just want to be a part of that whole Brooklyn family neighborhood that continues to grow and have everyone that lives in the area come and enjoy that atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. And it's in just the last year, it's been remarkable to see the changes.
Unbelievable. I mean, if you haven't been there in a year or two, you'll just be amazed what has just kind of grown up. And we're just hoping Unity Plaza, now that we're finally there, mm-hmm. Bricks is opening on the end, which would be a great pizza place.
That's a pizza place.
In June, in the summer. And, you know, Sprague is amazing. And I think just really the whole culture of Unity Plaza, all of us, you know, there's no competition there. I think we're all just working together to really bring events together, do things together to really just make the place a wonderful place for the community.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Kimberly tweets the show, Hobnob is Jacksonville's newest and greatest restaurant. Crew Jacks did a sneak peek event last week, and it was amazing. So there's a little social media love for
you. Yeah.
I was just over there the other day filling in on Channel 4 show River City Live. They broadcast out of Unity Plaza right next door to you guys. And I stuck my head in because I was so curious. So I'm really looking forward to being there when it's open. So again, if people are just tuning in, the dinner opening is
tonight. We have a few openings left, but we'll be open again tomorrow night.
Sure.
We're closed on Easter, but then open every night next week, and then our main grand opening next Saturday night.
Next Saturday night. So mark your calendar. Check out the newest place to not only go out and have dinner, but hobnob a little bit at the new Hobnob, the newest place to open at Brooklyn's Unity Plaza. Co-owner Ellen Cottrell joining us this morning, along with Hobnob executive chef Roger Regulacion. And congratulations. We are looking forward to seeing you again real soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you Melissa. Very much.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. The show's producer is Sean Birch, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. We always welcome your feedback. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast, now up every day at iTunes and Stitcher. You can also watch the show now with video on demand at tvjax.com and metrojacksonville.com. Just ahead, Diane Rehm takes a look at the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a wonderful Easter weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.